Okay, we're beginning here with the two dots on the top of Kuyud Aleph Amud Aleph. Tarabanan, Natana Sham Laho Yariv, Bekesef Lidaya. So he gave the Asham to the first Mishmar, and then the Kesef to the second Mishmar. Yachzir Kesef Etul Asham Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that Yidaya should give the money back to Ho Yariv, because the Asham ended up there first, and we're going to see in a second the logic behind Rabbi Yehuda's position. This is against what is said in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah follows the position of the Chachamim, which we'll see in a second. And then they'll wait until the next time Yehoyarib is in Yerushalayim 24 weeks later. And then they will bring the Asham, and the Kesef will be in order then, because the Kesef will precede the Asham. Chachamim omrim, yachzir Asham etzel Kesef, the other way around. The Asham will be taken from the Mishmar of Yehoyarib and given over to Yedaya. Hey, hey, dummy, what exactly is the situation here? If they gave the Asham when Yehoyariv was in Yerushalayim, and they gave the money, he gave the Gezel Ager to the Mishmar of Yedaya while they were working, each one of them was Zocheh and whatever was given to them, why should they have to, quote-unquote, disgorge that and give it to the other Mishmar? So Amarova Acha Bayaskinan, Deyaiv Asham Laho Yariv Bemishtamarto de Yohyariv. He gave the Asham to Yariv while they were working in Yerushalayim. The Kesev Lidaya Bemishmarto de Ho Yariv. And then at the same time he gave the money to the Mishmar of Yedaya while Yehoyariv was still working in Yerushalayim, before Yedaya was on, before their Mishmar started in the subsequent week. Rabbi Yehuda Savar came into Lav Mishmeret de Yedayahi. Since Yedaya's turn is not now, Lidaya katsinale, we penalize Yedaya and we force them to disgorge the money and give it to the Mishmar of Ho Yariv. Hilkach yakzir kesef etzel Asham, and that's why the kesef, the money moved to over to where the Asham is, and it'll be brought by the Mishmar of Yeho Yariv if we get it back to them before they leave Yerushalayim at that cycle. Otherwise, 24 weeks later, they'll bring the Asham and the kesef at that point in time. Rabbanan savre shaloki din hu avud b'nei Yehoyariv. Tikiblu Asham mikame kesef. Yehoyariv here is out of line because they accepted the Asham gzelot prior to having the Karen or the Gezel Ager paid. And since they're the ones who are in violation here because they accepted it prematurely, hilkach l'didhu kansinanu. Therefore we penalize them, and that's how we explain the Mishnah. V'yachzor Asham etzel kesef. And therefore the Asham will move to the kesef. Or in other words, if the Asham is still extant, as we said in the Mishnah, then it will be given over to the Mishmar of Yedaya, and they will keep both the Gezel Ager as well as the Asham. Tanya, we have a braita. Amar Rabbi, Lidivrei Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Im Kadmu B'nei Yehoyariv, Fi Krivu Et Asham, if they went ahead and they were Makriv the Asham, without asking any questions, before they asked for the money, before anything was cleared up, Yachzor v'yavi Asham acher v'yakrivu b'nei Yedaya. Then they will have to bring another Asham over here, and that will be brought by b'nei Yada v'zachu alalu b'mashiyadan. And each one of them is zocheh in whatever was there. Meaning that b'nei Yoyariv will keep the Asham, which the Gemara will discuss in a second why that is or how that is. And then b'nei Yedaya will keep the money that was given to them, as well as the additional Asham that is being brought now in the proper order. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that first the monies must be paid, and then only afterwards can you bring the Korban. We'll see the Lima for that later on. So therefore, he has to bring another Asham at the time of Yedaya, because the first Asham was brought before the monies were given in to the Kohanim. So Amrei, Lamai Chazi Asham, what is this Asham good for when Yehoyariv brings the Asham prior to the Kesef? Pasol! It's Pasol! If it's Pasol, then what are they going to do with it? It goes out the Sreifa. So Amarova Le'oro, the skin or the hide is valuable, because even though the Korban itself is pasul, the hides remain okay for the Kohanim to take. Tosafot over here already asks a question and challenges that, and he says that's only true once the hide has been separated from the animal, and then the dam is put on the Mizbeach. Even if the basar, or even if the Korban is pasul, it's enough to be matir, the skin or the hide that was already separated. But over here, where the psul is up front, and it happened before they ever were makriv the asham, then why should it be that the skins are mutar the kohanim? And as Tosfos concludes here, v'amai lo yitzeh or the sreifa. Why doesn't the skin or the hide go out with the rest of the animal to be burnt? So there are mishonim that suggest that this follows the opinion of other tanaim who believe that it's only when the psul korban is visible or obvious that we would say or suggest that the skins or the hides are psul along with the remainder of the korban. And so here could be a case where the psul is not obvious because it's not clear why this asham that's done perfectly is problematic because of the fact that he didn't pay the money yet. Or the other possibility, and you see here the quotes from the Tosafot in other places in Shas, which brings both that reason that we just mentioned as well as the other reason, which is that here the Kohanim improperly skinned or took the hide off the animal prior to the Zrikat Adam, and then had the money been brought at that time before the Zrikat Adam, it would have been a Kasher Asham, and by doing so, or preempting by taking the hide off earlier, they're able to separate it away from the korban that is pasul because of the possibility that they could have brought the money in the interim. So in those ways, the Baalei Tosafot and other places in Shas try to solve this problem as to why the Kohanim would be entitled to the or here. Tanya, Amar Rabbi, once again, another brayta where Rabbi says, the divrei Rabbi Yehuda, im kayam masham, if the asham is still extant with the mishmar of Yehoyariv, yachzir asham etzel hakesef, then we move the asham over to Yedaya, where the money is, which is similar to the position of the Chachamim, and seems very strange, given that Rabbi Yehuda says that we penalize Yedaya and not Yehoyariv. Va Rabbi Yehuda yachzir kesef etzel asham itlay. Isn't his principle that the money moves to where the asham is? And so why here is the asham moving to the money? Hachamayiskinan kegon de nofak mishmarto de Yehoyariv. It's in the case where the week of Yehoyariv is, mishmar is already closed out, and they've left Yerushalayim. Velo tavo. And they did not demand the money be paid to them. You know, what they should have done was demand that the money be given in so that then they can bring the asham, or the fact that if they got the money afterwards, at least they could bring the asham the next time they are there. The fact that they never inquired about getting the money, we assume, akamashvalan, dahule achilu gabayu, that they were mochel the money to Yedaya, and so because of that, Yedaya become the principal mishpar with regards to this gezel ager, and we move the asham over to them because it has yet to been put on the mizbeach, and we give that right to Yedaya who has the money in hand. Tanya Yidach, we have a third right to Amar Rabbi, the Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, im kayam asham, if the asham is still extant, yachzor kesef etzel asham, then the money moves back to the asham. Now this is what we would have expected in the previous brayta, but we got the opposite. And the Gemara here says, pshita. That makes sense. Hachi itlay. That is exactly the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So what's Rabbi adding? We know that the money moves over to the asham, and that's what is being demanded in the brayta here. Hachi ma'iskinan kigon de nofik mishmartam dahani udahani. It's a case where both mishmarot have left Yerushalayim. Both Yehoyariv and Yedaya. Velo tavu. And here, neither of them made a claim or a demand. Yehoyariv didn't ask for the money, and Yedaya didn't ask for the asham. What we would have thought is that they cross-forgive each other, and they leave each other with whatever item that they have. So then the monies would stay with Yedaya, and the next time Yehoyariv is in Yerushalayim, they bring the asham, because that's after the Gezel Ager was already returned. Kamash Malan, what we conclude is no. Tamrinan came in. Lotave lahadru bereisha. Since neither of them claimed or made a claim against the other one to bring either the asham to Yedaya or to the monies to Yehoyariv, we go back to the original state. And the original state is what Rabbi Yehuda said, that the kesef moves over to the asham, and therefore the monies and the asham will be given to Yehoyariv, and next time they're in Yerushalayim, they will distribute the monies and bring the asham as a korban. So now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah and says, Shemivig zelo ad shelo yivi ashamo. We said in the Mishnah, and we said that even Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to this, is that the Gezel Ager has to be brought, the monies have to be given to the Kohanim prior to the Asham in order for the Asham to be efficacious. Menahani Mile, how do we know that that's the case? Amarova Damar Kral, the pasuk that we've quoted numerous times, Hasham Amushav Lashem, a Kohen, Milvad Ela Kippurim, Asher Yichaper Bo. Michlau, from this you would assume, the Kesef Beresha, that the money is brought first. Remember that we said the word Asham is a synonym for the principal amount. So now the Asham is returned, and that's besides the fact that there is the Ela Kippurim, the Asham. So the understanding of the pasuk is you bring the money, besides the fact that you also have to bring an asham. Amar Avomir Rabban on the Rava, one of the Rabbanon challenged Rava's understanding of the word milvad here in the pasuk, because we find other places in the Torah where the word milvad is used and you cannot explain it that way. Elamiata, milvad olata boker, when it says in the psukim, aside from the olata boker, when we're talking about the musafim in Parshat Pinchas, hachanami michlal du musafim bereisha, so you're going to tell me the new musafim that are enumerated first go first, and then only afterwards the olata tamid shel shachar is brought, because it says milvad afterwards? Vatanya. And we have a brayta that says just the opposite. Minayim shalei davar kodem letamid shel shachar. How do we know that the tamid shel shachar has to be the first korban that is put on the mizbeach? Tamal omar varach aleha ha'ola. Ve'omar Rava, and Rava explained ha'ola with the hea yidia. Mean that the ola rishona, the first ola, this must be the first ola, or the ola that precedes other olot that come in the mikdash, and that is the ola tatamid, the korban ola tamid shel shachar, or ha'ola means the first korban that is mentioned in Parshat Pinchas, which in the Seder korbanot there you have the korban tamid, then the korban of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, and then the other moadim. So you start out with the ha'ola, the ola, the one that you know, that's the first one that was mentioned there, and that's the olata tamid shel shachar. The olata boker has to be the first korban there. So you can't read the word milvad to say that means it comes afterwards. It must mean that it even precedes it. Milvad, besides what you already brought before, it will actually have the exact opposite interpretation. So amalei, ana miasher yichaper bo nafka. I learned it from the latter half of the pasuk. You misunderstood me. The end of the pasuk says, asher yichaper bo in the future tense. It says, milvad ela kippurim, asher yichaper bo, that he will attain atonement with. Vadayin lo kiper. But that shows you, or that indicates, that he has yet to get kapara from the ayol that was brought as the asham gzelot. Because it's saying, besides the asham gzelot, that will bring atonement in the future. That means now when he's asham mushab, when he's bringing the karen back, he has yet to have brought the korban asham. And that's my limud from the pasuk. Natanu et hakeren, the final line in the Mishnah is that you only need to pay the karen in order to attain kapara. The chomesh is not na'akev the kapara. Tanu banan, minayim shemvi mi'ilato, velo yvi ashamo, ashamo velo yvi mi'ilato, shelo yatsa. So here the Gemara is discussing a totally different case of asham mi'ilot. This is someone who misappropriated hekdesh, and now in order to attain atonement, he must return the money to hekdesh, add on a fifth, plus bring an asham mi'ilot. And what the Braita wants to know is that how do I know that if the person brought the mi'ilah, the principal amount, but did not bring the asham mi'ilot, or the other way around, he brought the asham mi'ilot, but he did not bring the mi'ilah, the principal amount, that he's not yotze, and he doesn't attain kapara. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, be'el asham v'nislach lo, that only once the ayil of the asham gzelot is brought, does he attain kapara? As Rashi interprets over here, the word the ale, which is a noun phrase with the word asham, Rashi says, well, it means both things at once. Be'el means the ayil of the asham, and ha-asham means the principal amount, like we saw here by the case of asham gzelot. And therefore, the kapara is only attained with both the ayil and the asham, the ayil being the korban asham mi'ilot, and the asham being the principal amount. Uminayin. How do you know that if he brought the korban asham mi'ilot prior to returning the amounts that were due to Hekdesh, the principal amount, that it doesn't work? Meaning that it says be'el ha'asham, the asham that was already given. Meaning that the asham that was already paid, this is the ayil, this is the korban associated with it. Yochol k'shem she'ayil ve'asham me'akvim. You would think just like the ayil and the asham are mutually necessary in order to accomplish the atonement, kachomesh me'akev. So too the chomesh would be me'akev the kapara. Tamalomar be'el ha'asham v'nislach lo. The only requirement over here is the ayil and the asham, the asham mi'ilot, and the return of the principal amount in order to attain kapara. Ayil v'asham me'akvim. Therefore, only the ayil and the asham are me'akev de kapara be'akdesh. Vein chomesh me'akev, but the fifth is not me'akev. V'ilameid hekdesh mehejot. And we will learn out hekdesh from hejot, v'hejot mehekdesh, and a lay person from hekdesh. The lay case is asham gzelot, the case of hekdesh is asham mi'ilot. So hekdesh mehejot, where do we learn something from that of asham gzelot that teaches us something for asham mi'ilot? Ma'asham dehatam keren. Just like the word asham, by asham gzelot, as we established already, means the principal amount. Af asham dahacha, so to asham that's mentioned by asham mi'ilot, is the keren. Again, these parshiot in the Torah are juxtaposed to each other in Vayikra Hey, not including what's found in Nasoh Hey, but at least that of asham mi'ilot and asham gzelot are right next to each other. So there's reason to believe that the word means the same thing in both of these parshiot. B'dehejot me'agdesh, and what do we learn for asham gzelot? From Hashem Me'ilot, Ma'akdesh in Chomesh Me'akev, just like by Akdesh, the Chomesh is not Me'akev the Kapara, Af Hejot, so too we learn by Hashem Gzelot that the Nami in a Chomesh Me'akev, so too there, the Chomesh is not Me'akev the Kapara. And in Tosafot points out here, if that's the case, why don't we learn everything out of the Hashem Me'ilot? We wanted to know before what was the order, whether you have to pay the money first or bring the Hashem Gzelot first. We could have learned that out from Hashem Milot as well. So Tosva says, no, we needed to learn out at least some basic information from both of them internally, because then we can establish that they have the same character or paradigm. So once we've established that they have very similar qualities, then we can start learning from one to the other. But if you never establish that baseline in order to have them look like each other, then we wouldn't know to extrapolate from one to the other. So therefore, we first had to come to independently learn that the monies go before the korban in both cases. Now that we have that established and they look like each other, we can learn from one to the other. We can learn about chomesh from the asham milot to the asham gzelot, and we can learn from the word asham by the asham gzelot to the asham milot, telling us that that means keren. With that, we complete the ninth perek, Adron Alach HaGozel Itzim. Okay, now we're beginning to be in the last perek of Baba Kama, the tenth perek. HaGozel Uma'achilet Banav, a person who steals and then feeds his children this theft, v'heniach lifneim, and he puts it before them. Over here, Tosafot discusses how literally we take the word ma'achil, because ma'achil would mean literally that he feeds it to them, versus v'heniach lifneim, which just means that placing it in front of them. Do we say that it's dafka ma'achilet banav? And then the term v'heniach lifneim would be a vav chibur, that he gave it to them and placed it in front of them and they ate it. Or is ma'achilet banav lav dafka? And v'niach lifnehem, as Rashi says over here, is o'shehiniach lifnehem, or he put it in front of them, because machilat banav is not absolutely necessary. Tosafot over here discusses the different options as to whether machilat banav is the only way to generate the change in ownership over here, or are we going to follow in the Gemara, Rav Chista, who says that there was already yeush here, and the mere fact that it transferred to the children now gives you yeush v'shinei reshut, and you don't need them to actually consume it in order to remove it from the hands of the nigzal. Now, even in that scenario, Tosafot suggests that it's possible that the children would have to eat it, and just giving it to them would not be enough, because here the children are sumeich al shulchan aviyem. They are eating by their father's table, and they're dependent on their father, so they're not really viewed as an independent entity. So maybe even according to Rav Chista, you would say this. And even according to Rav later on, who suggests that Yeush by itself is sufficient, and because he holds that our Mishnah is like Rav Chista, that it's after Yeush, then for sure Rav would say that Ma'achil is Lav Dafka, because Yeush itself is sufficient to generate the change in ownership. And therefore when it has to be eaten, maybe that's not Dafka, but rather Lav Dafka. Tosafot in the end says maybe even according to Rav, you could argue that Ma'achil is Dafka, because of the fact that a davar misuyam, something that's identifiable as the stolen object, there is a requirement to return it, even if there was yeush, or even if there was yeush and shinui reshut, and therefore even Rav, who just requires yeush, in that situation would demand that it be returned unless it was consumed. The Tosafot speaks about the possibility of both options of it both being dafka and lav dafka, and shows that it could be either way. In that instance, the yitomim, those that in get it from their father, p'turim milishalem. They do not have to return it. V'imayad davar sheish ba'achrayut. On the other hand, if it is something that has achrayut associated with it, chayavim lishalem. They are obligated to pay. In the Gemara, again, we will see two explanations for what that means. whether it means the object itself is a discernible object that is known as the stolen object, or the other possibility is that it is kark or land that was passed to the Yorshim, and the lien of the Nigzal already exists, and therefore they're obligated to repay the Gezel, because he already has a lien on the property that was passed to them. So Amar of Chista, Gazal v'lo nityashu abalim. If he steals something and the balim have not given up hope of getting it back, uva'acher v'achalo mimenu, and then someone else comes along and eats it from him. Over here there are questions of whether you need the word mimenu, because it could be he gave it to this individual, or if you leave out the word mimenu, it could just be uva'acher v'achalo, that he ate it, took it from the original owner. And obviously that has nafkaminot as to whether we think that this is only true when the second gazlan came and took it against the will of the first gazlan, or do we say this is even true when the first gazlan feeds it or gives it to the second gazlan, as long as he's aware of the fact that it is stolen merchandise. Then Rav Chista says, Ratza mizegova. He has the right to collect from either of the parties or from both of the parties. He can't collect more than the principal amount that was stolen. But between them, or from one, either one of them, he has the sole right to decide how he collects the money, because they are both thieves here, and they are both responsible to return the monies to him. My time, Kokama delo nityashu avalim birshute de marei kai. Because as long as there's no yeush, it stays in the possession of the original owner, and therefore each additional gazlan over here is a person stealing from the original owner. It's none. Our Mishnah. Hagozelu machile banav feiniach lifnehem pturim milishalem. Over here we have the original, the father, who is the thief, and he's giving it to his children to eat. And the children are p'turim l'shalem. According to Rav Chista, why isn't the situation here that both the father and the children are responsible because they are both parties to the gezel? To yufta de Rav Chista, that's a strong refutation of Rav Chista's position. Amalacha Rav Chista will answer, kitan yahil achar yeush. Our Mishnah is a case when there was already yeush. So therefore you have yeush, and now you have a shinoi reshut. So the father is still responsible because he took it and he didn't have shinoi reshut, so he wasn't kone it. He's responsible to return it. And again, the children, where there's now yeush and shinoi reshut, they don't have a responsibility anymore to return it, because they are now separated away from the gezel, and they're not the ones who stole it. And since they have a kinyan now on the object, and they're not the ones that stole it, they're not responsible to return it. Now the Gemara continues, Im eniach lifnehem p'turim l'shalem. If he leaves it in front of them, then they do not have to pay. Amar Rami bar Chama, zot omeret. From our Mishnah you would conclude, reshut yoresh ki reshut lokeach dami, that the possession of an inheritor is the equivalent of a buyer. Rava disagrees and says, reshut yoresh lav ki reshut lokeach dami, that a yoresh is not considered to be a buyer. The basic question, or the way to look this in the abstract, is that when you have someone that is yoresh and inherits a party, do we view that as a change in ownership, or do we see the inheritor as just continuing whatever the person who granted the inheritance was before? They basically step into the shoes of that other individual. So Rami Chachama sees here a change in ownership, meaning that when you move from the party that owns it and then it goes in through inheritance to the next party, you have a change in ownership. That's shinoi reshut. On the other hand, for Rava, it's just a continuation of the previous individual, because they just step into his shoes, and therefore there is no shinoi reshut. And therefore, what are we dealing here? Kishe achlum. The reason Rava says that they don't have to return it is not because we have yeush and shinoi reshut, but rather is because they ate it. And that's what we said before, the way that you read this, ha-gozel machilet banav veheniach lifnehem. According to Rava now, v'iniach lifnehem is a continuation of the first statement, that he placed it in front of them and they ate it. And so once they've eaten it, there's nothing to return anymore, because the object itself is no longer extant. And in addition to that, these are not the thieves, meaning that the Yorshim are not the thieves. And since their father has already passed away, and they are the Yorshim here, the father's not around to make the claim against him, the Yorshim are not the thieves. So now you don't have an obligation or an obligated party to return the item. And so since it's not here, he has no claim against anybody, and the object itself is no longer extant. And that's why they are p'turim milish shalem. Whereas for Rami bar Chama, the reason that the Yorshim don't have to return it is because you have yeush and shinoi reshut. And therefore when they have it, even if they did not eat it, if it's still around, then they don't have any obligation to return it because you have Yeush and Shina Rishut. Bahamik Tani Seifa, what about the latter part of the Mishnah that says, Imayad Davar Sheish Bo Achrayut, Chayavim Lishalem, that the latter case is a case where there is Achrayut, if it's an object, and the way we're reading it now is an object with Achrayut. Rashi reads it in the broader sense, like the Gemara will explain later, that it doesn't just mean real property like land, but it means any property where it would be clear that this is the stolen object, then there is an obligation on the children to return it. Michlau, the reish b'gzela kayemet askinan. Because the safe is not in a case where it's still extant, the gzela, and that's why they have to return it, because it's obviously stolen items, they are hot items, and it's obvious to everyone that they're walking around with these stolen goods, and therefore the good name of their father, they should return it. But that means that the item is still around. That implies that the reisha also is talking about a case where it's still around against Rova's explanation. This is what it's meant. Don't read it as the fact that these are objects that are discernible and have the shame gzela in them, but rather if their father left them real property, then they are obligated to return it to the gazlan. And that's because the gazlan already has a lien on this property from the time their father stole the object. And that lien passes through from the father to the son on the property. The lien still exists and he can go then and collect the property from the yorshim or from these yitomim. Now as Tosafot points out here, that's according to the one who says that milvah peh, you can generate such a lien. Or a milvah peh where it's ketuvah b'torah generates a lien. According to those that don't say it generates a lien, you'd have to say here it's a case where the nigzal already took the father to court and it was amad badin. So there's already an obligation that existed or pre-existed the death of the father that created the lien on the property so that it's not just a milvah peh, but it's a milvah ha-ketuvah. Vaha. Is Rava's explanation really tenable inside the Mishnah? We have an explanation of this Mishnah from Rabbi, Matnilei Rabbi, the Rabbi Shimon Brei. Rabbi, in explaining this Mishnah to Rabbi Shimon, his son, says, Lo davar sheyesh bo achrayut mamash. When I said achrayut in the Mishnah, doesn't literally mean achrayut or real property. El afilu para b'choresh ba chamor mechamer acharav. Even a cow that they are, an ox that they're using to plow with, or a donkey that they are driving to carry a load. Because those are discernible objects that you know are the stolen items. Chayavim lachzir. They are obligated to return them ipnei kvod avihem. So you see again here, according to Rabbi, it's clear that the object is still extant. And you can't give the explanation that Rava gave, that it's not about the object itself. It's being about the lien on a property that was passed to them. That's not the case. Rabbi explains it to his son in a different manner. Elo amar Rava, ki shachivna. When I pass away, Rabbi Oshaya nafik levati. Rabbi Oshaya is going to come out to greet me. The taritzna matnitin kavate. Because I explained the Mishnah just like him. So now Tosafot says that this is not the only time in Shas that Rava explained a Tanaic work the similar way to Rabbi Oshaya. Rabbi Oshaya is a Tana Amora. He sits in between the Tanaim and Amoraim. He's known throughout Shas as one of the Misader Abraitot. He and Rabbi Chia have a shame as having brightot that are considered to be verified and quality brightot that we can ask questions on in the Gemara. And so therefore, Rabbi Oshaya's explanation carries weight. And Rava says, my explanation of this Mishnah is just like Rabbi Oshaya. In this case, it has extra weight because Rabbi Oshaya's explanation of the Mishnah is neged Rabbi, is against the way that Rabbi explained it to his son. And he's saying, that's why Rabbi Oshaya is going to be so happy with me, because I explained the Mishnah similar to his manner, despite the fact that Rabbi explained it otherwise, and despite the fact that Rabbi Oshaya is a Talmid of Rabbi. Because he says, Datani Rabbi Oshaya, Agozelu machilet banav, exactly like our Mishnah, Pturim ilishalem, Heiniach lifneihem. So here you see there's a break between machilet banav and Heiniach lifneihem. Gzela kayemet chayavin. In the case of Heiniach lifneihem, if the gzela is still around, then they have an obligation to return it. Ein gzela kayemet pturim. On the other hand, if the gzela is not extant, they do not have to return it. So that's exactly like Rava explained here, which is that the case where it was eaten is the case where they are patur. And so it's over here. If the gzela is not around, that's where Rabbi Oshaya says that they are pturim. In addition, heniach lehem avim achrayut nechasim chayavim lishalem. He explains the latter part of the Mishnah in the same way that I do, which is not that he left them davar sheyesh bo achrayut, an object that is obvious or carries the name of gzela with it, but rather he gave over to them real property that had a lien on it. So Rava's explanation of the Mishnah, both in the Reisha and the Seifa, are corroborated by this bright of Rabbi Oshaya. And that's what Rava says. Rabbi Yoshiah is going to come out to greet me because I explained the Mishnah just like the way that he explains the Mishnah. So Amar Mar. So now the Gemara goes back and tries to look at this Braita more carefully. In Gzela Kayemet Pturim. If the Gzela is not extant, then they are Pturim. Te'avi Tiyufta the Rav Chista. That should be a strong refutation of Rav Chista's position, because over here we're talking about a case without Yeush, and Rav Chista said above, then both parties are responsible. The first Gazlan, who's the father here, and the second Gazlan, who are the children here, who ate it. So I'm Rav Chista, Kitanya Hi, Lacha Yeush. Rav Chista will say the same thing with regards to Rabbi Yoshiah's bright, as he said by our Mishnah, that the case here is that it's after Yeush. Since it's after Yeush, once they eat it, it's no longer extant. There's no longer an obligation to return the item. The item's not here. You had Yeush, and you have Shinoi Rishut, and so for that reason, there's no obligation to return it. Amamar, Gzela Kayemet, on the other hand, if the Gzela is extant, Chayavim Lishalem, they do have to return it. Neima Tavi Tiyufta Rami Barchama, that should be a strong refutation of Rami Barchama's position, because now, if we explain that the case here is a case where it's after Yeush, and in addition, we have the Yorshim taking possession of it, you now have Yeush, Vishinoi Rishut. According to him, Yoresh is the equivalent of Shinoi Rishut. That should already make it that they don't have to return it. Why, if the item is extant, but it moved to the Yorshim, do they have to return it? So Amlecha Rami Barchama, Kitanya Hahi, Lifnei Yeush. He disagrees with the position of Rav Chista and says that the case in the Braita must be a case before Yeush. So obviously Rami Barchama does not subscribe to that position of Rav Chista, and therefore Shinoi Rishut is koneh. But here you don't have any Yeush, and therefore if the Gzela was eaten after their father passed away, they are Pturim, because he doesn't hold of Rav Chista, his din that you can go after both of them, and therefore there's no obligation on the Yorshim to pay at that point in time, despite the fact that there's no Yeush over here. On the other hand, if the item is extant, he will say that normally Yoresh would be considered Shinoi Rishut, but here we lack in Yeush. And since we lack in Yeush, then there's no Yeush and then Shinoi Rishut, which would then free the Yoshim from having to return the Gzela. Ravada Barava, Matni Laha, the Rami Barchama, aha. Ravada Barava had the statement of Rami Barchama not on our Mishnah, but rather on this Braita. Heiniach lahem aviyem ma'ot shel ribit. Their father left them monies of interest. Interest that was collected illegally, as the Torah says, you're not allowed to collect interest on loans. Afopi shiodim she'en shel ribit. Even though they know that these are monies that came from interest collections, ein chayavim lachzir. They have no obligation to return them. Amar Rami Barchama, Zoto Merit, from this you would conclude, Rishut Yoresh ki Rishut Lokei Achdami, that the Rishut of a Yoresh is the equivalent of a Shinoi Rishut, and since here you have now Yeush and Shinoi Rishut, for that reason the Yitomim don't have to return it. Rav Amar, Lola Memelecha, Rishut Yoresh, Lav ki Rishut Lokei Achdami. Once again, Rav over here disagrees and says, you don't have to conclude that from this Braita, the shiny ocha, and you can explain this differently because damakra, al tikach mito neshech vitarbit. The Torah says you may not take interest collections from him. Aharle, you have to return it to him so that he can live with you. Meaning that there's an obligation to return the interest that was ill-gotten. And that's from the remainder of the pasuk, which is v'cheachicha imach, that your brother should live with you, that you have an obligation to ensure that he can live with you. Lididekam is there le'rachmana. That obligation is only on the father, the one who collected the interest. But the children are not obligated to return him or to ensure that he lives and is not burdened by the interest payments that he made to you. Now Tosfot over here asks, how is Rami Barchama so sure here that Rishut Yoresh is Rishut Lokeach? How do you know that we're speaking about the reason that the Yorshim don't have to return it here is because we're talking about a case of Gzela, and then you have Yeush and Shinoi Rishut. How do you know that there's Gzela here? The item was given, or the interest was given by the other party, willingly. So why would you call that Gzela? And how do we know to conclude whatever Rami Barchama is concluding over here? So the Baal Tosfot in the end say, since the Torah says you may not give interest, or you may not collect interest, even though the Loveh, the borrower, the debtor gave it willingly, it's deemed to be Gzela because it was given incorrectly or improperly. And so even though it was given by both parties in a willing agreement, the Torah deems it as gzela because it says you're not allowed to do that. Now the Gemara concludes, Man damatni la braita, the one who says that Rami Barchama's din is about the braita, kol shukena matnitin, certainly he would say that about our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah, there's much more reason to believe that the reasoning behind the Mishnah is Shinoi Rishut. Over there, we don't have a pasuk that tells you otherwise. Over here, you have a pasuk that Rava quotes that might indicate that there is a different din over here. Again, because the pashtut of our Mishnah is a case where the gzeila is still extant, not like Rava who says kishachlum when it was eaten up. If you just read the Mishnah at face value, it seems that even if the gzeila is still extant, there's a tor. And therefore, if you say it by the brayta, you're certainly going to say it by the Mishnah. On the other hand, the one who says Rami Bar Chama's din on the Mishnah of Avala Braita, Rami Bar Chama could Rava Matnila. Rami Bar Chama could learn like Rava, meaning that he could subscribe to the pasuk that says that there's a specific obligation only on the father, not on the child. And that pasuk tells me that's the reason they don't have to return it, irrespective of the issue of Rishut. Yoreish ki Rishut Lokeach. Rashi actually brings a girsa that says just the opposite. And that Rami Bar Chama could explain the Mishnah like Rava Kisha Achlum over there. And therefore, it would just turn out to be the opposite. If you say on the Braita, you don't have to say it on the Mishnah. But if you say on the Mishnah, you would say it on the Braita. Rashi rejects that Lashon and says that he thinks the Rishon, the way that we have it in our Gemara, is the proper Girsa, that if Rami Bar Chama is qualifying the Braita, certainly he would qualify the Mishnah. And if he qualified the Mishnah, that does not mean that he qualified the Braita.